Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, your host. And today we're going to be talking with Pitsana Shanmugathas. He is the co-producer, co-director of a documentary, six-part documentary, Truth to the Powerless. By the way, that is truthtothepowerless.com if you want to see the product and also to learn more about it. truthtothepowerless.com. Pitsanas, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Phil. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Well, we had you on previous, and we're glad to have you back. Because, you know, time goes by, and your work, this is one that is really wants to explain, I'll ask you how about it, but my impression is a Canadian foreign policy, but particularly focusing after World War II. And since you produced this documentary, Truth to the Powerless, we've really been embroiled in some ugly moments here. And so you must be reflecting on your work. But let's start off with the, let's go through the six parts. You begin with the colonial background, which I assume informs how Canada has evolved the kind of foreign policy it has. Am I right about that?
Yeah, so it starts, the first episode starts briefly from the colonial time, from when we served under the British in places like, you know, Caribbean and in Africa, very much doing their dirty work. And then it talks about Canada's support for fascism in the lead up to, you know, World War II. You know, William Mackenzie King was a notorious anti-Semite. He praised Hitler, said Hitler was like Joan of Arc. Hitler's going to revolutionize Germany in a good way. So it kind of it talks about that, talks about Canada's support for the Japanese Empire, Japan's invasion of Manchuria. And then we go into the post-World War II phase where we talk about, you know, Canada's role in the founding of NATO and then so on and so forth. It goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, you spoke to one of we could almost call him the official biographer of Justin Trudeau, Mr. English, who also was an authority on Lester Pearson, I believe. And you just talked about the Cold War business. Lester Pearson was ground zero for Cold War ideology. Talk about, what did you learn about that?
That's right. And we cover that in the first episode. Lester B. Pearson, he was, there's this myth about Lester B. Pearson, you know, that he opposed the Vietnam War. And we kind of exposed that as a myth. We interview Noam Chomsky, who at the time even was speaking during the Cold War, speaking, went on to the CBC said on air how Lester B. Pearson counseled Lyndon B. Johnson, if you wanted to attack Vietnam, go ahead, but use iron bombs to do it. Don't use nuclear weapons, but if you want to destroy Vietnam, go right ahead and do it. And Canada was delivering bombing threats to North Vietnam in its position on the ICC, the International Control Commission, was delivering bombing threats at the behest of the United States to North Vietnam, which is a violation of international law. And this was under Lester B. Pearson. So there's this absolute myth. We also uncover how Lester B. Pearson, we even interviewed John English about this. We uncover how Lester B. Pearson was instrumental in the founding of Israel and the expulsion of the Palestinians, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, the Nakba. So we, you know, Lester B. Pearson is certainly not this benevolent figure.
Yeah. And he really is central. He's still a touchstone of how Canada views itself. And also, there's a mythology, and you really deal with that well. And again, it's Pitsana Shanmugathas, and the documentary series, six-part, is truthtothepowerless.com. You deal with the Canadians need to be reminded the Korean War happened and the Canadians actually sent soldiers. When you look back, well, Canada and North Vietnam don't really, or I shouldn't say North Vietnam, Korea, the whole Korean Peninsula is really none of Canada's business if you were to think about it objectively, but it became a cause célèbre and nobody questions even to this day whether that was smart. 15,000 Canadians died.
Yeah, it was a horrendous invasion atrocity. Just, I mean, it kind of got to the point where they were just bombing, the Western forces were just bombing dams and bridges, just flattening in North Korea, just flattening it. And it was far more egregious than what the United States did in Vietnam. That's not just the level of intensity. And I was just talking with some Canadian activists. What we're seeing now, the suppression of dissident voices that we're seeing now with respect to Russia, Ukraine, that was happening in Canada with respect to opposition to the Korean War, the same level of suppression of dissent, because the Cold War hysteria was just so ample, was just so vocal. So it's interesting to see that similarity.
Yeah, I'm really glad you make the point, because I feel that we need a word. I know Cold War is one word or term, but another one might be quasi-war. We seem to be operating, our parliament is a unanimous, wall-to-wall, all parties are following what I would call a war policy without declaring a war. And also without explaining to Canadian people how this is going to be of any benefit to them. I don't see it. But at any rate, for example, apropos of China, the language really is the language of warfare, but we're not at war. And of course, the language towards Russia is warlike language, but we don't actually have any declaration. And we're a member of this thing called NATO, in which we don't even know who makes the decisions. We're there. they say, oh, we have an officer, or they have a meeting. Yeah, but that's a rather mysterious group, NATO, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, in our docuseries, we talk about people like Noam Chomsky, who we were fortunate to interview. They talk about how this notion of responsibility to protect. So there's like a two versions of responsibility to protect. There's like the NATO version, and there's also the UN version. So publicly, the leaders will try to appeal to the UN version of responsibility to protect. And when the UN version doesn't suffice, they will go covertly for the NATO version of responsibility to protect. And we saw that with Libya, where it was used, the NATO version was used as a means to overthrow Gaddafi. And the UN authorized a UN resolution. It was a no-fly zone over Libya, but it never authorized for Gaddafi to be overthrown. So,
to bomb civilian targets, or even they weren't supposed to engage in the war.
Absolutely.
And the planes of the Libyan Air Force they were not trying to fly. They blew them up on the runways. They weren't flying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to have it's kind of like a guy who says, I'm here to catch the speeders. And then he sees a guy car parked and he goes and arrests him for having a car that might speed. Doesn't make any sense. But people, frankly, the media lapped it up. And of course, your sources, Eve Engler, I should say, sources or inspiration, the work of Eve Engler and of Noam Chomsky, are very focused on how our population is persuaded to go along. You want to talk about how their role intellectually in the development of your project of Truth to the Powerless?
Yeah, when I was a kid growing up, I was my education system failed me with respect to the fact that we weren't really taught about all the horrendous things that Canada was doing. To the extent that Canada was any criticism of Canada, we were taught about it was how we treated our indigenous people, the residential schools, the cultural genocide, splitting children from parents. That's what we were taught about. Well, but we weren't taught about how during apartheid South Africa, white minority South African officials would come to Canada, observe our reservation, indigenous reservation systems, and use that as a model to how they structured their apartheid systems, their Bantustans, how they segregated the black indigenous population. They used the white minority South African officials used our reservation systems as a model to do that. We weren't taught that in school. It wasn't until that I stumbled on the works of Yves Engler that, you know, his book, particularly the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, that it kind of just blew my mind open about, like, I always suspected that Canada has this, this nefarious history, but I wasn't getting that from the mainstream media, that kind of education. It was just really by an accident that I stumbled on Yves Engler's work, and I was just hooked. So that's how Yves Engler inspired me. Noam Chomsky had been aware, just on a moral level, he had influenced me to, as a citizen of the West, it's always the moral thing to do is to look at the atrocities that you're responsible for committing. It's easy to point the blame on the other side, oh, Russia, China, but what about what we're doing, and what about the role that we're playing? You know, and we have far greater influence as Canadians to change the way that our governments act, instead of changing the way that China is acting, or changing the way that Russia is acting. And that was how Noam Chomsky inspired me. The name for this docuseries, Truth to the Powerless, comes from a saying that Noam Chomsky said in the first scene of the docuseries. Noam Chomsky's looking right into the camera, and he's saying that the people in power already know the truth. It's the powerless that don't. So it's our responsibility to educate and inform the powerless so they can rise up and, you know, change the way that the government operates. So that's how Truth to the Powerless came about. It's something that Noam Chomsky said. So his influence is just so palpable.
I like your point about Chomsky, because, among other reasons, because at one time, Noam Chomsky was interviewed on Canadian radio television when he was, as he always has been, blocked in the U.S. I mean, they basically, I guess you could use the term, he's on a blacklist. That is, they don't want to hear from him. But he was heard from here. But I noticed that actually is gone now, right? I don't see him ever, actually. I mean, you have to go online and search to the kinds of websites and maybe other networks internationally to actually find him speaking to immediate issues.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we actually feature a clip in the first episode of our docuseries of Noam Chomsky on CBC Radio. The host is Peter Gazowski, yeah. And Noam Chomsky is going off about how Lester B. Pearson is this war criminal, and Peter Gazowski is getting pissed. So that just kind of shows you why Noam Chomsky may not have been very welcome on the screen.
That may have contributed, yes. So after the show, you would love to have been there. You're, of course, a co-producer. You know about these things. There's a little discussion afterwards where I'm sure they circled the name and said, don't invite him again, and without a prior agreement. So now, this is a great project. I'll remind our listeners, it's truthtothepowerlessness.com. It's a 6-part documentary series covering the colonial history, a role of finance, support for apartheid and for the establishment of Israel and the conquest of the occupied territories, post-Cold War, the action in Afghanistan and Yugoslavia. It also covers Iraq and Libya, as well as Haiti, which, all, by the way, all these things are very much in the news. So your documentary is a great reference point on all this. And go ahead.
Oh, and one thing about our docuseries, which everybody should know, is we interview, what's so unique about our docuseries, Truth to the Powerless, is we interview the politicians that were responsible for formulating, advocating, and championing these various foreign policy issues, like Afghanistan, Haiti, Canada is selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, Canada's policies on Israel, Palestine. We interview the politicians that were responsible for championing and spearheading that. And then we contrast that with interviews from academics and activists like Noam Chomsky, Eve Zengler, Richard Sanders. So you get the establishment perspective, and you get that perspective challenged by Canadian activists and academics. And it's the first docuseries that has done both of those things, the Canadian docuseries, first Canadian docuseries on foreign policy that's done both those things.
Jitsandra, you spoke also to a Canadian soldier who had served in Afghanistan. You know, that's, I'm very impressed that you did that, because these things, as we hear about former soldiers and whatnot, they tend to be sound bites, and most of it is a pat on the back and that kind of thing. But what did Ryan Pugnato have to tell you?
Yeah, so Ryan served in Kandahar, and Kandahar was really, Canada's in Afghanistan, and during the Afghanistan war, Canada's deployment to Kandahar was really our first really serious military mission since the Korean War, where we were just very much boots on the ground, and just, it was just very intensive. And Ryan was a soldier in the Canadian Army, and he had just talked about really how the Afghanistan civilians, they did not welcome our presence there. They did not like us being in Kandahar. We were not welcome there. They just thought that we were this aggressive force, and there was no way that, you know, for us to be, you know, doing these raids and knocking on villagers' doors and chasing them out, and then on the other hand be doing these so-called development initiatives. You can't be doing both of those things and then trying to pacify the population. And then, you know, I asked him, do you feel like how, as a veteran, do you feel that Veterans Affairs has treated you well? And then he kind of just laughed and said, oh man, I was so duped. I took what the politicians told me. I took it hook, line, and sink. I was so duped. He basically says he's been treated horribly. And it just goes to show, you know, politicians' mindset, you know, they just send our men out to die. And then when they come back shell-shocked with wounds, as, you know, Ryan did, he had suffered injuries, and he didn't even serve his full time in Kandahar. He just talks about how Veterans Affairs treated him horribly. So that just really the mindset, you know, you send our boys to die, and many of them come back shell-shocked or injured, and they're not taken care of.
Ah, the old-fashioned term, shell-shock. That was, when I was in the Marine Corps, we were shell-shocked. Now we have post-traumatic stress syndrome, but
we should go back to shell-shocked. And I feel like if we did, maybe they'll take it more seriously.
I absolutely agree, because it is far more vivid term, and people understand it. You know, it becomes rather amorphous. You know, what the heck are we talking about? Post-trauma syndrome, blah, blah. But shell shock, okay, that gets it. Something went off in his mind, it is not quite the same, and his body's probably shaken. Was speaking, of course, to the producer, co-producer and director of Truth to the Powerless.com, and it's Pitsana Shanmugathas. I congratulate you, too, on hunting up, to my mind, a very reliable, smart, ex-military man, Scott Taylor, no relation. But that guy has a lot. We had him on the show a couple of times. He really takes you to the front, you know, and he does it with a brain. He really analyzes what's going on. Talk about what he had to say.
Yeah, he runs this military magazine, and you know, he was part of the military, and he's become very much disillusioned with just the way that the Canadian foreign policy establishment really conducts itself. So he talked to us about how Canada's involvement in NATO, the bombing of Kosovo, the horrendous egregiousness of it, how it was in total violation of international law. We did not have a UN Security Council resolution. NATO came in. And how are you going to have this? We also talked to Canada's former ambassador to Yugoslavia, James Bissett. And James Bissett raised this interesting point. You know, NATO's bombing of Kosovo was labeled a humanitarian mission. Well, how are you going to have a humanitarian mission by bombing the population so relentlessly? And more people died as a result of the bombing than prior to NATO's intervention. So Scott Taylor also talked about that. He also went to Afghanistan, and he spoke with the warlords, and you know, he brought this interesting point. He's in the minds of the Afghans, they see Canada, the United States, as foreign occupiers, and they will fight to the last Afghan. You could buy the Afghans gold houses. This is what Scott Taylor told me, that the warlords told them. You could buy every Afghan gold houses, but we will still fight to the last Afghan. That's how the Afghanistan people saw, the warlords saw, Canadians saw Americans. And he also talked to us about Libya and NATO's involvement in overthrowing Gaddafi, and really the refugee crisis that came about. Scott Taylor talked about how Canada, despite taking a lead role, it was a Canadian general that was leading the NATO mission in Libya. Despite taking a lead role, we did not suffer the refugee crisis. The refugees, they went in boatloads to Europe, to Italy. Canada did not get those boatloads of Libyans coming in. So despite our horrendous atrocities, we did not pay the price in that regard. So there, certainly Scott Taylor brought such an interesting perspective, being somebody from the military brass and being a dissident. That was very instrumental for us.
You know, I appreciate that point about this, Scott Taylor, and what you've managed to put together here with the 6-part series. I found he had what they used to call a telling detail. And I when we interviewed him, he said he had been in northern Iraq, but he said, you might be interested to know there are no Iraqi flags in northern Iraq. He said the only flags he saw were Kurdish flags. But meanwhile, all the Canadian media agreed to call it Iraq. But he said, well, what's going on? We're working with Kurds. We're not working with the Iraqis. I thought I said, thank you very much. Very telling detail. Pizzano, I want to ask you something apropos of what we're learning here. Here we have what's called Canadian foreign policy. It's, of course, done in the name of democracy and freedom, and it's protecting the poor and oppressed. But we have a thing called the Five Eyes. And Canada, we just had Canada Day celebration. They tell us it's a multicultural society. But Five Eyes are four of the five have the same king, Charles III. The other of the Five Eyes is American, and which makes them, pardon the expression, blue-eyed, white, Protestant, English-speaking. Isn't that a bit of a con on the population? How can we be multicultural and an Anglo-Saxon formation?
If this alliance is going to be truly multicultural, why not bring in, you know, some of the African countries, the Caribbean countries, really, really bring in this inclusion? I guess they don't want to do that, because if you do that, you may have veto power over really these imperial ambitions of this organization. It's similar to why NATO, why United States refuses to allow Russia into NATO, because if Russia is in NATO, then NATO, Russia will have veto power. So this imperial, so we can't have that now.
No, you might have peace. That would be a
exactly.
Problem. That would be really an awkward problem. But you're quite right. Have veto, but yes, and the veto would involve. But we're talking about, of course, domestic Canada. It seems that they are assuming that the new Canadian will follow. We used to call them new Canadians. I don't know what the new term is now, but the will follow the Anglo-Saxon strategy. But ultimately, if you put it to the people, that cannot. That actually can't work because you're asking people to say, be enthusiastic about attacking countries or religions that where they're from. Kind of a contradiction for them, don't you think?
And I think that the Canadian people, a lot of them aren't even aware of the Five Eyes. I think if they were aware of really what this meant, of what you're speaking about, the Canadian citizens, the average population will be opposed to it. But this is very much kind of done in the background. It's the nefarious nature of this is not brought to the mainstream, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, is my job and your job, right? I think you've gone a long way toward doing it, by the way, with truthtothepowerless.com. Such thoughts will occur to a person watching this documentary. Now, one of the people you interviewed has become the center of a lot of attention. Dimitri Lascaris is now touring the country and speaking for peace, talking about how we could bring the, I guess, called Ukraine war to an end. And he's doing it very successfully, though many want to silence him. What was Dimitri talking about? What do you make of his current campaign?
Yeah, we were fortunate to get to interview Dimitri Lascaris, and we interviewed him on his views on Canada's role in supporting Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories, and also Canada's participation in the Lima Group as well, you know, what we're doing in Venezuela and what we did in Honduras. And so we talked to Dimitri Lascaris in that regard. We do, in our docuseries, talk about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In episode 5, there's a segment where we discuss the legacy of NATO. And the legacy of NATO is the Russia-Ukraine war. That is the legacy of NATO. NATO, when the Cold War was going to end, there was a deal struck between George H.W. Bush and Gorbachev that NATO not expand 1 inch to the east. Since that time, Clinton...
The voice of Pitsana Shenmugathis is frozen for a moment. He probably hears me. I hope he does. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And the documentary is a 6-part documentary.
Hello?
There you are.
I've been
filling in. You were about to make a heavy point about concerning Dimitri and Venezuela. Oh, pardon me. You were on to the... He was talking with you about the possible war over Ukraine, which has now happened.
Yes.
And he's now out there publicly. You know, I have to say, he's like Don Quixote so far. He's got his shield and his spear, but it's a rough job. Go ahead.
Yes. So, you know, NATO has now expanded eastward right up to Russia's border. And what Dmitry Lascaris, he had gone to Russia. He had spoken with the Russian people, and he wanted to bring that perspective to the Canadian public. So he's gone on this tour to really, you know, tell, you know, people what he heard from Russians, how they feel about this war, and really how we're contributing as a NATO member in providing weapons to Ukraine and rejecting a diplomatic solution. And so in episode 5 of my docuseries, we talk about the legacy of NATO, the Russia-Ukraine war. I'm an alumni of the Monk School, and the Monk School was having a debate on the Russia-Ukraine conflict. They had brought in John Mearsheimer, academic realist thinker, John Mearsheimer, Stephen Walt, and they had also brought in on the opposing side, they had brought in a former first day. And they had also brought in the former foreign minister of Poland.
Oh, I thought it was David Frum. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah. And so they had brought in those two officials to argue that the motion was that whether or not Russia's geopolitical security interests should be considered in the context of the Russia-Ukraine war. The answer is obviously it should be. but these opposing sides were saying, the former State Department official, the former minister of Poland were saying, oh no, Putin, he wants to resurrect the Soviet Union. It's Russian hegemony. That's what he's aiming for, which is total nonsense. And Dmitry Lascaris is going around the country really talking about the role that we're playing as part of NATO in sending Russia, sending Ukraine weapons and really exacerbating this conflict. And we need to look at our role in this. And that's what Dmitry is talking about. And a lot of these pro-Ukrainian segments of the Canadian population in Toronto and Montreal were successful in pressuring the venue to shut him down because they were threatening. There was a real risk of violence.
But he's coming back now, so it's turning into a really good fight for, of all things, democracy and even freedom of speech. If we can think about that here in Toronto, actually, freedom of speech is going to be struggled over, and I'm betting on Dmitry. It's Pitsana Shamugathas. You produced a great documentary, six parts, truthtothepowerless.com. Very eloquent of you today. Thank you very, very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, Phil. It's been a pleasure.
A lot of fun. Thank you. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We'll be back.